Hey, welcome to the Napcast, your source of geekly entertainment. My name is David.
And my name is Seth, and we have another guest here with us this week on the Napcast.
What?
Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, my name's Lucas. I am a PR manager by day, and nights and weekends I run a creative resource for gamers, musicians, storytellers called Scintilla Studio.
Scintilla Studio. And I believe...
Scintillating.
I believe you're also in a band, like a local band or something?
I am.
Yeah, you do sound kind of familiar. Have we had you on the show before?
I feel like we have. A little bit. I'm a multifaceted person.
Wait, was it that one improv episode?
I think it was, actually.
Boy. I would recommend people go listen to it, but it's kind of embarrassing for me, so go listen to it, laugh at me, but Lucas was there.
It can't be any worse than the accents episode.
That one wasn't terrible, because I at least had some guidance there.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't remember any of what happened on Improvapalooza.
It's all a blur. Someone married a hog.
Pretty much. There was Arnold Schwarzenegger there too much. He was Scottish. Yeah. So, but Seth, what are we talking about today with Lucas?
We are going to be talking about something that neither you or I know a lot about, and that
not
is
very much.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Now, quick preface, I have played like 3 or 4 times, so I know about the game and I know a little bit about how it works.
I started playing D&D about a year ago, so I'm more familiar with it, how it works, but not familiar enough that I would feel confident trying to explain it.
You have DM'd once, I believe.
I have been the game master for one session before.
And DM is my initials. No, DM is Dungeon Master, meaning you are like the person in charge?
I am all of the NPCs, I am the story, and I know what's going to happen to all of the characters who are played by the people in my group.
And if I remember correctly, the goal of the group is to throw off the DM. Is that right, Lucas?
Among other things.
Oh.
Well, that's not really a goal, but I think sometimes it just happens because people are people.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like, can I do something? Yes. Okay, I'm going to do it. Wait, what?
There's a great portion of DMing that's just herding chickens.
That just sounds frustrating.
Toward them, just like, guys, this way. But you can't tell them because that's railroading. You have to just leave little breadcrumbs.
And hope they're paying attention.
Hope to goodness.
So, Lucas, you have experience being a DM?
Yeah, I started playing in Dungeons & Dragons in its fourth edition when I played.
Oh, wow.
The fifth edition had just come out.
Which means something.
So why don't you go ahead and launch into a little bit of a history of Dungeons & Dragons for people who may not know.
Amazing. Like, so Dungeons & Dragons in its, let me skip a little bit.
Because it's been around for 30 or 40 years.
Has it
at
really?
This point. Yeah.
It was first published in 1974.
Yep.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Decades of D&D.
I thought it had been around for like maybe 15 years.
Ooh,
but
no, sir.
So when I say I started in the fourth edition, that's really not that impressive.
Oh.
I mean, there are guys who've been playing this game for decades.
Mm.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
But the way the games work, from the little that I've experienced, every single time you play, it is entirely different, but still like similar elements, I guess, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah,
like, everything's an experience.
The mechanics tend to be the same.
Yeah.
So overall, the game of Dungeons & Dragons is a tabletop role-playing game. So it's in that genre. It's kind of the granddaddy of that genre, to be honest. It was born out of the whole kind of war game tabletop simulators that existed in the early 60s. So things like Warhammer 40K or...
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
So an NBA 2K? Wait, no, that's not right.
It was meant to be this kind of game that would move. It was a tactical simulation game to begin with. And the more it went on, the more it sort of moved toward this storytelling aspect. The core mechanic of Dungeons & Dragons is a 20-sided die.
Ooh, otherwise known as a D20. I know that much. I feel accomplished here. But we're starting off simple so I can keep up.
Yeah, so basically, it's a shared storytelling experience. So any time you want to take an action, you want to find the object, fight the monster, convince the shopkeep, you roll the 20-sided die and you get a number from 1 to 20. And that, based on that number, that's your percentage of success at the thing you want to do. And then your character sheet allows you to add certain modifiers, so given characters will be better at certain things, and they'll be more likely to roll a higher number.
Okay. You say given characters, I know a little bit about this, but for those who don't, what are the kinds of characters besides, I guess, NPCs in the background?
Well, they're the player characters in this particular case.
Okay.
So there are, I don't know the exact number of classes and class combinations in D&D because they keep adding to them.
Oh, but that's where the additions come in, I guess?
Well, among other things.
Oh, okay.
It's each edition, I think, is a little bit more refined than the last. Like, okay, this didn't work in this edition, so we're changing it in this next one to see if it does work better like this.
It's more about the game mechanics edition to edition. But Dungeons & Dragons exists in sort of a generic fantasy setting, so your class option, your race options are elf, dwarf, orc,
Human,
halfling, kind of the whole thing.
I like how human wasn't first in that list. Humans aren't fantasy.
Who wants to play
as a
human?
They're kind of the worst. They're one of the only ones without dark vision. It's awful.
Ooh. Oh, yes.
Dark vision sounds like it's seeing in the dark.
I think it is. Okay. It's especially bad when you're in a five-player party and one of those characters and only one cannot see in the dark. So everyone else is fine and the human in there is just like, what's going on? I can't see anything.
Yep. But the class options are, there's 12 in the current edition.
Oh gosh!
Some of the more iconic ones are wizard, the arcane spellslinger, your rogues, which are your thieves, your sneaky stabby guys.
That's the only character I've ever played. The sneaky stabby guy.
And
with a crossbow.
With a crossbow, okay.
Two, actually, but yeah.
And your clerics, who are kind of your devout support healer white mage kind of class.
Clerics are kind of the best.
Kind of the best? It sounds like you play a cleric, Seth.
I'm
you might
not
be
biased at all towards clerics.
maybe
what
just a
are
little
you talking
bit.
About?
I'm just guessing here. But
no. Why would I be biased towards clerics?
Because they sound like healers, and don't healers usually get a bad rap?
Healers just tend to be thought of as like the squishy wizard stereotype
that gets
applied to clerics a lot because they're the healers and healers are also squishy. So you put those two things together and everyone thinks, oh, the cleric's just the squishiest thing ever.
I think the best metaphor for the attitude towards it is if you're playing Overwatch and you're trying to get someone, anyone to play Mercy. That's about the same kind of experience you might have trying to put together a party that includes a cleric.
I mean, I get a lot of hate here, but is Mercy the healer in Overwatch?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's that thing that you all desperately need, but that nobody really wants to commit to doing because it's not as fun.
It's
or
not
as flashy.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's why I played a rogue.
Mm-hmm. You're not the one as a cleric. You're not the one stabbing the monster and like holding its head aloft. You're the one who's making sure everybody else can do that and not die.
Here, you don't die, and you don't die, and what are you doing? Stop that!
So when your cleric goes down in, I guess, a fight, are you basically done for?
It's bad news.
Oh, okay.
I don't think one of the beautiful things about Dungeons & Dragons is there's never a moment where you're done for.
I beg to differ here, but I'm only going to bring up a story of when I was playing where I think it was, Lucas was playing Seth, where you were being the DM.
I was
the
dungeon master for this story.
And we had like sub roles where each character had a hidden secret agenda. And Lucas's character, who was the healer, had the agenda of basically killing off everybody else in the group.
No, wait a minute.
So he locked us all in a room with a monster and just ran away.
Hey, wait a minute.
And we all died.
That's not why you died.
So what I meant was there's
that's
always...
That's just a side story.
Yeah. I do feel bad about
I'm
that.
I'm still not bitter or anything. What are you talking
no,
about?
No, not at all. But as the dungeon master in that situation, I found it extremely difficult to actually get the characters to die.
Because it's very hard.
It is. It's really hard to get everyone to die because, like you were saying, there's always a way to get out.
Okay, well.
In this edition of Dungeons & Dragons, the math works out to where it's very difficult to kill a player character outright.
But still doable.
It's doable, it's but it's hard.
Although
it's
I guess if
difficult.
You play it more so like long campaigns like people usually do rather than a one-shot, then the character just doesn't die because then they'd be out of the campaign.
I should say this at this juncture. The way it's sort of meant to be played,
commonly played maybe?
Yeah, the way it's is where you get your set of characters together and you sort of drop them in this open world sandbox and they sort of begin to explore what makes them interesting as characters, what their bonds, flaws, and ideals are
ideals.
Yeah. So every character is like required to have these things that sort of guide their behavior in the world.
They all have like a backstory as well.
Yeah,
I guess, and that plays into it. I think
they do.
Mm-hmm. Some of the backgrounds will give you features that have a mechanical impact on the game, such as proficiencies in certain skills.
Or the ability to just use a spell once per day or whatever without mm-hmm. having to burn a spell slot, which...
Okay, and those are, I guess, wizards and clerics that we've mentioned that have the spells?
Sometimes.
There are other characters, like the ones we've mentioned so far are rogue and maybe humans. No, that human isn't actually a type. Human is a race.
Yep.
Yes.
But there are other characters that are that we haven't gone over yet that I can't remember what they are. One of them is a fighter, where we haven't even mentioned them yet.
Yeah. So kind of the classic D&D party is wizard, rogue, fighter, cleric. So one of them is a backline spell slinger. One of them is kind of a striker to finish people off. The cleric is your support class that keeps everybody healthy and up. Right. And then the fighter is your frontline melee bruiser.
The guy who actually gets close and fights whatever needs to be fought.
He's mm-hmm. up in everybody's face.
Yep.
And usually his personality reflects that aspect of his combat skill.
Right.
Is this usually like the dumb human fighter? Is that a common stereotype?
Well, it doesn't have to be. So
the guy who can't see in the dark but runs forward is like, I'm going to fight it.
The thing about Dungeons & Dragons is that it's a collection of very loosely managed stereotypes. So you have the option to just play to the type and, you know, get the strongest, beefiest character you can and just swing an axe for 3 hours. But a lot of the fun of it is to sort of go in and subvert the tropes. So,
and this is where the DM starts pulling their hair out, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean...
Sometimes.
I think my greatest joy as a dungeon master is to see people make choices that aren't obvious, to try to solve the puzzle box in a roundabout way that I didn't expect. So as when you're running the game, you have to everything has a chance of succeeding at least to some extent,
right?
Because you're rolling a die to see if it happens.
Unless you roll a one,
where everything goes horribly wrong,
right? So both extremes of the die, the natural one and then the natural 20, are sort of opposite. There's sort of the yin yang of Dungeons and Dragons, where a critical failure happens and that's spectacularly bad in some way or another. And then you roll a natural 20 and that's a critical success. And on an attack, it does a whole bunch more damage. And on other options, you know, it's sort of left up to your discretion, where something really remarkable and incredible happens in that moment. So you have to be prepared to just gather up your 10 pages of notes, throw them out,
the
and say, now we're doing this. I hope you're happy.
It's all trailblazing from here.
Oh, yes. I've seen parties completely break a story before because they tried and succeeded to do something that the DM didn't want them to do for another like 3 or 4 sessions.
Exactly. And this is the difference between tabletop role-playing and PC or video gaming, because those are limited by the programming. There's only a certain amount of things.
Where the program itself is basically the dungeon master?
Yeah.
Like those old-fashioned games... I haven't played them, but I know of them where it's basically just text where you type in, I want to do this, and the program says,
right,
I don't understand that, or
right,
you do this and this happens.
Right. Yeah, in a sense.
Okay, and that's the DM, but the DM can then react and go with a story that doesn't work.
Yeah, we have yet to build a program that can match the storytelling complexity of the human mind.
It's incredible, and that's one of the things that I personally love about D&D so much, is it can be whatever you want it to be. Within reason, I suppose, or within the mechanics of the storytelling.
Within creativity.
It's the most important thing that I keep hearing about D&D is it's not about how well you know the rules. It's about having fun.
That makes sense. And
ultimately,
speaking of such things, you were mentioning, Lucas, like critical failures and critical successes where you roll a 20 or you roll a 1, which I think also happens with different dice because I know there's different sizes.
Yeah, most of it runs off that 20-sided die, and then the rest of them are used for other things. But it goes from your a tetrahedron, a 4-sided, all the way up to 20.
Okay. Do you have any hilarious or really amusing stories that happened where someone absolutely failed something or got a critical hit where they rolled a 20 or something like that?
Sure. I think my favorite natural one story started in a back alley in the Underdark.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, boy. It's a great setup already.
Yeah, so this is kind of the... If you've seen Stranger Things, the the Upside Down is the Underdark.
It's really? Okay.
Yeah, it's dark, creepy fungus world.
I guess that makes sense. Yep. I've not seen enough of Stranger Things to make that correlation before.
So we're in.
I've seen Stranger Things. That was a joke. I haven't actually, but.
Boo!
It's not that bad. I've seen Stranger Things. Anyways, getting back on topic.
So we're in the dwarf city in the Underdark. We're in a back alley. We're being threatened by people we don't recognize. And I have this thing that I got off a dead body.
Do you know what it is?
I do know what it is. It's a potion of strength, but I don't know how good it is.
Oh.
So I was like, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm not getting pushed around anymore. So
not gonna take it. No,
we ain't gonna take it. So I pop the cork on this thing. I knock it back and I find out it's the strongest. It's the best strong potion there is.
Oh,
my strength goes from 10, which is about average, to 24.
Wait, 24 out of usually like 20?
Out of 20, yeah.
Wow.
Oh,
so
boy.
You are insanely strong now.
Yeah. So I'm like, frick yeah, I'm gonna suplex a dwarf in a back alley in the Underdark.
And you rolled a one to do this?
I rolled a one.
Uh-oh.
And,
oh, no.
Yeah.
What happened?
Nothing. I grunted and strained and didn't get a good suplex off. Apparently, I wasn't used to having muscles.
And this actually, this reminds me of something. This is where you get different kinds of DMs where some DMs in this particular scenario would just say something like, you try to suplex this dwarf and nothing happens. Other DMs will go on this huge whole story of you try to suplex this dwarf and they go into detail about every little thing that happens.
Oh, come on, Eric. That's not funny.
It results with you like flipping over the dwarf, knocking you on your back. You fall through the floor. You end up a whole bunch of terrible things happening. And there's different kinds of DMing there. I guess, first of all, which one do you prefer? Which kind of DM do you like to be?
Oh, gosh. So every DM has their, you're right. Every DM has their own treatment of the natural one. I tend to think of a natural one as a failure, but like I try not to just say you can't, particularly because if that's the yin, then the yang, the natural 20 is you can. And I don't like a world in which anything has a 5% chance of happening.
Right.
So for example, one of the things that I did with one of my players who was playing a rogue, he had a longsword for the bonus damage. You shouldn't. It's a giant, you can't sneak attack somebody with a sword as tall as you. So he rolled a natural one to attack and I said, all right, roll damage for me.
Oh no.
So he rolled a 6 and I said, all right, your sword is stuck in the wall. You have to roll a 6 or higher to get it out. And his strength wasn't that good. It took him 3 rounds to do it. And I was never more proud of a natural one.
And Seth, you had a moment that you keep telling me about where you're playing D&D. You were in like a dark tunnel somewhere.
Oh no.
And you had some spell. I forget the exact story, so I'll just let you tell it. Do you know what I'm referring to though?
I know exactly what you're talking to because my party still will not let me live this down. So I've been playing in a campaign for about 8-9 months now. And I am the healer cleric, as I may or may not have hinted at explicitly before.
Wait, I thought you said you didn't have a bias towards clerics.
I mean, no, what are you talking about?
Oh, okay. I just wanted to be clear.
So I am the cleric in our party. So I know a lot of different magical casts and abilities and whatnot. One of these is a decently powerful spell called Meld into Stone, which allows me to basically become part of a nearby stone or wall or something made of stone.
Does the wall have to be stone or can you just kind of turn into stone?
It needs to, I have, it's me merging with something else that is already stone.
Okay.
So it's really good for sneaking or for not being observed or for not taking damage. So the way, we were walking through this really dark hallway. And
probably made of stone, I'm assuming, based on the nature of this story.
We were underground in a dwarf city, and I was really claustrophobic and just not having any of it. So our human barbarian, who is about as intelligent as the stereotype suggests.
Okay,
he is the
great.
Only member of our party who can't see in the dark. So he's just kind of fumbling through the dark at the head of our party. And all of a sudden,
why is he at the head of the party?
Because
he's a
strong,
barbarian.
He's the strong, beefy one who's like 6'5" and made of muscle.
And he has the intelligence to know that he's at the front of the party with no dark vision, I'm assuming.
We just kind of ended up that way in our marching order.
Well, okay.
So he's walking along in the dark, and all of a sudden he sees this outline. So he's like, I don't know what this is, but I'm gonna swing at it. So he does, and as he swings, there's this hiss of escaping poison gases.
Uh-oh.
And everybody freaked out. I unceremoniously, like, immediately used Meld into Stone and jumped backwards into the wall where I remained for the entire combat encounter.
The entire combat encounter?
The entire combat encounter. So, around...
Did you just watch your friends die?
None of them died.
Oh, okay,
but
great.
I didn't know what was going on. My character was already super claustrophobic because she doesn't like being underground. So I just kind of said, screw this, I'm getting out of here.
And jumped into the wall.
I jumped into the wall. And to this day, they will not let me live it down.
I have to agree with them on this one.
That's like, great.
That one's on you, bro.
That brings up an interesting point, though, that I wanted to bring up. When you were mentioning that you were playing as a female character who's claustrophobic.
Yes.
Which, as far as I know, isn't you. Well, I mean, you're not female, but...
What do you mean I'm not female?
But oh, when you're playing, 6 years old.
Yeah.
When you're playing D&D, you have these characters that have their own personalities, and it sounds like you have to adopt this character's personality and be the character and not yourself.
Again, yeah. I mean, it can be, you can role play as your character as much or as little as you want to. So, I mean, to keep things interesting in this particular campaign, I chose to play as a female elf who is a cleric, and who is also extremely claustrophobic and doesn't work well with others.
So from a Dungeon Master's perspective, there's three pillars of gameplay in Dungeons & Dragons. There's social interaction, investigation, and combat. And you'll find that all of your players appreciate those aspects in different percentages.
Yeah.
So okay. For a lot of us, it's kind of an exercise in improv theater.
And I was going to ask, this sounds like a lot of improv, and it seems like the people who are better at improv are better at rolling with things quickly or making funny scenarios happen?
That was actually the reason that I started playing D&D was because I'm an actor, but my improv skills are not great. So I wanted some kind of outlet to be able to
and
get...
And you jumped into the wall.
Yeah, with both feet.
Okay.
But I'll contradict you on that one, because there are players who appreciate it from a mathematical sort of tactical standpoint.
Yeah.
And those
I'm not saying there aren't.
Yeah, but I mean, those people are just as good often at coming up with these sort of zany, off-the-wall, great moments
actually,
that you tell stories
about. Yeah, no, sometimes they're better at it.
So, to amend it, you don't have to be good at improv. That
no.
kind of person excels in more so, I guess, the social
in
aspect
about
of it.
A third of Dungeons
you mentioned there's
yeah.
the three
yeah.
pillars. But really, almost anybody could play the game if you have an attention span long enough to sit down for however long the game
if
takes
you've
at a
got
time.
3 hours and about four friends who are equally committed to the idea, you can play Dungeons & Dragons.
So the three pillars you mentioned, it was social, investigation, and combat?
Yeah.
So can you go into these three different areas?
Okay, sure. So the social part of Dungeons & Dragons is, let me think about this in a way that's going to make sense on tape.
It's digital. You don't have to worry about that.
The social aspect of Dungeons & Dragons comes into play when you're trying to get information, when you're trying to maneuver yourself into an advantageous position. So some of those challenges might be to get a job, to buy your equipment at a good price, to sort of read the shifty baron and see if he's hiding something. Your investigation would come into play if, for example, that same baron was hiding something, but you don't know where it is, and now you've got to sort of work your way through his trapped dungeons and all of the magical and mechanical devices that he's laid down there for uncareful adventurers. And then the combat part of Dungeons & Dragons is kick down the door, kill the monster, get the loot.
Yeah, actually,
that
in a nutshell,
about right.
That's about it.
And again, the people enjoy this game for each of those reasons by varying degrees. So your job as a dungeon master is to make sure that everybody in the table is getting out of the game what they came to it to get.
And is it easy to tell? I guess the more you do it, is it easy to tell who likes what?
It's very easy to tell. There's there's almost always one guy at the table who's way more into the role play than everybody else. And you want to give that guy some moments to let that shine. You want to take about 10 minutes and play out this impactful scene. And then you've got this guy who's got this min-maxed, absolutely perfect build where all of his features work together. And you want to give that guy a hopeless combat encounter so that he can come out on top.
You know, I'm assigning roles to people in my head for people in our party. I'm the one that will spend 10 minutes on role playing.
That does sound about right.
I did that in our last session kind of by accident. Uh-oh. But there is this defining character moment between me and another member of my party that I'd kind of been at odds with for a while. And then all of a sudden some things happened.
Shenanigans ensued.
Yeah, we had a moment. She almost died. It was great.
Okay. I have to ask, though, both of you have been a DM for me when I play, and I haven't played enough to know, like, what elements are what and recognize, oh, this is the social element, this is the... Well, I can figure out combat because I know what that is, but...
Are we fighting things? I can't tell. There's
roll
monsters
initiative.
Trying to eat me.
I failed a perception check.
Failed the
but
spot
I,
check.
But I wonder, Lucas, which of those categories, or maybe I'm even across the board, though I kind of doubt that, could you tell when I played which of those I leaned more towards?
Oh, gosh.
Because I know I'm not the greatest at improv, but I also enjoy trying to role play. I don't think I'm very good at it.
Right. So I'm trying to remember back to when
this
happened.
Not to put you on the spot or anything.
Yeah. I mean, when we played, the adventure that we ran is one that I built to be...
You built? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I wrote that adventure to be start to finish done in 3 hours, mm-hmm. which is not... Like, it's not the best way to play the game. Because in that, I knew I had to give you a person to interact with, a puzzle to solve, and something to kill. And those all ended up in that adventure in about even quantities. I think the thing that really stuck with you, at least from what I was getting from you at the table, was trying to figure out, like, through everything that's happening, what is the math here? What's what's actually going on?
A very logical approach to it?
Yeah, I think...
That's my normal thought process.
I think you're kind of in that second camp that we haven't parked on much, where you're about kind of the investigation and solving the puzzle. Which...
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That tends to be how I interact with people in general, is logically.
I've seen your YouTube channel. solving puzzles is probably a safe guess.
Yeah, what he's throwing out there. If you don't know, I have a YouTube channel where I solve Rubik's Cubes. We had a whole episode back in season one, or a couple episodes maybe, where I was talking about speed cubing.
One episode in particular that's now hopelessly outdated.
It's so outdated because when we recorded it and then when it's actually been released, there was like a 6 month gap or something like that.
Pretty close.
And the speed cubing records tend to move really quickly. So a lot of things you mentioned are very out of date. But getting back to D&D.
All right.
Seth, you've been a DM. Can you describe your, was it one or two experiences DMing?
Yeah, so it's a lot of it is you just have to be prepared to be unprepared, if that makes sense. So I had a pretty good idea of where I wanted the story to go and the things that I wanted to do. And so I started the story. The players all met each other for the first time as their characters.
Because it was a one-shot, right?
This was a one-shot. So the rules are a little bit different in a one-off adventure than a campaign.
People can die.
People can die. Well, people can die in a campaign, but it's a lot harder.
That's one of the other defining aspects of this is permadeath.
Dun, dun, dun.
If you die, you roll a new character. Like...
Are there not necromancers,
though?
There
are so many ways to bring somebody back from the dead, but...
None of them are very good.
Death is real. It has consequences. Either
and
you're
if you
just...
die, you just scrap the character and start over with someone else, and they just kind of show up and be like, hey, I'm here. I'm very similar to this other person that just died, coincidentally, but
I'm his brother. I worked in the same tavern.
It's more like Dark Souls rather than Skyrim. I mean, there are a lot more consequences to your actions than you would expect. One of which includes just playing the game with other people. So I had this adventure.
That doesn't sound like Dark Souls at all.
True, Dark Souls doesn't have multiplayer. But I had this adventure all ready to go. I was going to point them in the right direction to get them to do things. Within 5 seconds of us actually starting the adventure, the party turned around and went in the other direction to go to the tavern to gather information. And that threw me completely off because that was the one thing that I had not expected them to do.
I remember that. And then my character being a rogue, as usual, I was playing cards with somebody while everyone else was interviewing them. And I was managing to swindle this guy out of all of his life savings in gold just by playing cards with him.
It was pretty bad.
One of the few times I rolled high in that game,
rogues,
unfortunately.
Man.
Rogues are scary.
It's the only character I've played, unfortunately. I need to play other characters. Which reminds me, Lucas, I know you've played characters, not only have you been a DM, but you've played the game many times. What's your favorite kind of character to play, and why? It's a very vague question, but...
it's a really good question. So my...
No pressure.
I was going to say that, but it wouldn't have made sense. But.
No, honestly, I think my favorite class to play is the Warlock.
Warlock?
Yep.
How is that different from a wizard?
So in Dungeons & Dragons, your magic comes from a variety of different sources, either the divine, and side note,
the cleric.
Yep,
okay. From the natural world, so druids and rangers, or from sort of the arcane, or sort of the magical sort of mana that
like
suffuses the world.
Like runes and spells and things?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Kind of like the orb, melty candle, bubbling witch's pot. Like that.
Okay.
Double, toil and trouble.
A warlock's magic, by contrast, is a gift. A gift with strings attached that you make a deal with a being of higher power, and that's how you get to be a magic slinging badass.
Wait, Seth, this reminds me of you had a character. What was his name?
Steve from that village over there.
Wasn't he a warlock?
That's his full name. He was. So I was experimenting with some different character combinations because I was expecting all of the characters that I had just built to die.
Okay.
So I made a character who was basically a normal farmer from this random village who accidentally makes a pact with Cthulhu, because Cthulhu's in Dungeons & Dragons, although he's not called Cthulhu. His name is the Great Old One.
We can talk about that, too, because it's 44 years old at this point, and it's shameless about the things that it steals.
Oh, absolutely shameless.
Everything is in there.
Everything is borrowed from somewhere else.
But the thing that I love about warlocks is this is an instance where that closely managed stereotype comes into play very strongly. Because what the book is asking you to do, what this is almost built for, is the misunderstood moody edgelord. And I just... It's a genre so rich in opportunities. So a character that I built and haven't had a chance to play yet is a warlock named Phyllis Dillweather.
That sounds like a brand of pickles.
That's a fantastic name. I love it already.
She's about 73 years old.
I was going to say, this sounds like a sweet little old lady that no one would expect to be a warlock.
She's a sweet little old lady.
Oh my gosh.
And she accidentally picked up the Necronomicon instead of a cookbook.
What?
And has no idea.
So she cooked this whole magic spell or something and turned
and
into a warlock.
Everybody's afraid to tell her. You know, that's not the voice of her departed husband. That's that's the devil.
Grandma Phyllis, what's going on?
But the devil enjoys it so much because he gets to hang out with the sweet little old lady who bakes him cookies.
Exactly.
And it's him doilies and sweaters.
And she has no idea.
The possibilities are endless.
Why did you say you should?
Some kids come under her lawn and she's like, oh, I'm not going to scare them off. I'm going to bake them cookies. And accidentally poisons them all. And wait.
Oh, they ate the cookies and then the fire came out of their eyes.
It was the weirdest thing I've seen all week. I'm going to go play bingo.
Well, we're getting to the point where we need to wrap up this episode.
That we
but
are.
But before we do that, Lucas... What are some of your favorite stories? Because you've been doing this for a while. What are some of your favorite stories?
We gotta hear some favorite stories before we wrap this up.
So are we gonna do this popcorn style?
I don't know what that means.
So favorite stories. How fast do you want these to go? How much time we got?
Auctioneer style.
As
let's
much
go.
Time as you want.
Okay. If you're playing a barbarian, that's the class that gets mad and smashes things. You should always play a barbarian like you're ready to roll a new character next session.
Like you're just willing to
die? You have a death wish. You are looking to make an epic last stand.
So that's the moody edgelord.
Wait. I just completely realized we overlooked an entire type of character that is amazing in its own right.
Oh.
The bard.
The bard!
How did we not talk about the bard?
Oh,
because
no.
You don't talk about the bard.
There's not much to say except that the bard seduces everything.
I love it. Wait, I don't know that I'd go that far.
So
Shakespeare wasn't that much of a womanizer.
No, not that bard.
Mechanically,
Mechanically,
the bard class was introduced to the game to be a support option that wasn't directly tied to this sort of holy mission.
Like the cleric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So their magic comes from manipulating the mystic through music.
Okay.
And they have this special, this unique power called inspiration, where you can add another role.
Are you feeling inspired today?
You can add another role to the D20 to get a better option. So it's not specifically like you lost hit points, here's some back. It's like you want to do the thing, let me help you do the thing a little bit better. The problem is they're designed to be loud and to charismatic.
They can squeak talk their way into anything.
That's the archetype. So yeah, those are a thing. And you got to be careful who gets the bard character sheet. Because sometimes it's a bad idea.
Is the bard the kind of character that will derail the whole story really quickly?
Yes.
I guess almost any character could.
Any character could, but the bard has like... The bard has a license to it.
So the bard is basically Deadpool.
I think my favorite bard, well, of the like the two that I've played with, we had a bard that was a big walking, is it Warforged?
The technical term is Warforged,
but
basically
he's basically a robot.
An automaton.
But this was a bard automaton, and so we had the idea that he was like a big walking Calliope. Where he just had a whole bunch of instruments all over the place.
A big circus organ.
If you push the wrong button, they all pop out and make a bunch of noise and he'll fail a stealth check or something. And this particular character, which was actually Luke, who we've had on the episode before.
Yeah.
His secret mission was to steal things as this big walking musical instrument kaleidoscope of things. And he was walking
faulty
around
programming.
Trying to steal stuff. His name was Alt-10 John, because it was
that's
brilliant.
Not a subtle reference
of
at all.
Of course not. But he was walking around trying to steal things, and he rolled a one on a couple theft attempts.
Oh, it was
and
great.
And he knocked over a vase and caught everybody's attention in the house, and all the lights come on. It was just really weird. It was great. Getting back to what you were saying, though, popcorn style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are some of your favorite stories?
So... favorite. Let me set up a favorite. I've got long lists of quotes out of context.
No.
Okay. Absolute best thing that happened to me also involved Bard.
Okay.
Oh,
we
no.
played an epic tier one shot. Level 15 characters that have demigod powers.
Oh,
so break the
epic
world.
Epic tier and not epic tier one.
Yes.
Okay, so like they were all high level. I when you said epic tier one, I was like, they're all level one, but they're epic.
Oh no, epic tier,
but
one shot.
Okay, I got
gotcha.
So they're all like super high powered?
Gotcha. We had one night to play the kind of character that might normally take you years to build.
To get
the
to.
Kind of powers that would take you years of real time to
phenomenal
acquire.
Cosmic power.
Exactly.
Bitty time to play it.
So we pulled the ripcord, and that was the evening where I played a druid and we were fighting a dragon, and the thing about dragons is that they can fly, which is not it's very difficult to do that in Dungeons & Dragons.
Unless you're an Asimar.
It's still, like, they're very careful about who gets to fly and when, because that's game-breaking.
Yeah.
So my job was to stay close to the dragon and deal damage. And it's
as
so,
a bard?
As a druid.
Oh, you weren't the bard, okay.
The druid is kind of a shape-shifting class. I got to turn into a bear and just mix it up.
They're the wandering hermit that lives in the forest by themselves for 30,000 years.
I was going to say Bear Grylls, but that's not the right guy.
He would definitely be a druid. Couple levels of fighter.
Les Stroud would be a druid, let's
yep.
be
no,
honest.
No, I'm thinking the guy from The Hobbit? Bjorn, is that his name? Where he can
Bjorn
turn into a bear?
Is already a druid.
Yep.
That's what I was thinking.
That's
of,
the
but...
guy. And
oh,
that's
okay.
probably where it comes from.
Oh.
So I have this option to turn into a bear and mix it up with the dragon. And I'm like, heck yeah. So I get in there, I'm mixing it up with the dragon. It is not going well.
Oh no.
The dragon okay. gets the option to fly 40 feet in the air in a turn. That's way higher than I can reach. I'm about 6 feet tall. It's not gonna happen. It comes to the bard's turn.
Uh-oh.
And the bard has a choice, because the bard has a spell called Polymorph.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Is he
going
to turn you into a dragon?
He gets to turn me into
whatever he wants.
So he was like, okay, either I can use this on myself and go in there and bust him up, or I can play the support class and give it to the druid who's already right there. And God bless her, she did.
Did she turn you into a dragon?
She turned me into a freaking Tyrannosaurus Rex.
What?
It's 10 feet high. It has a 10 feet vertical leap.
What?
And it has a 10 foot reach on the tail. So I knocked the dragon out of the air.
Jumped up, swung your tail around, and...
That's amazing.
It was incredible.
Wow.
Did it deal any damage or just knock it down?
It pulled it down to where we could deal the damage. It was just like jaws of life, man. And pull
That's
straight
amazing.
Down.
That's amazing.
That spell lasted longer than the combat. So here we are over the carcass of this dragon. Jurassic Park style, the banner comes down, step on ahead, roar defiance.
Right.
And I'm like, how much time do I have left on this spell?
Oh, like 6 hours.
About 10 minutes.
Oh, shoot. Oh.
I gotta go. I got some things to do.
I gotta rampage to town.
I gotta rampage.
Kill everyone.
I get about to the door of the cave and I forget that the bard can end the spell by choice. So,
uh-oh.
Yep. Didn't get to rampage much.
Oh,
shoot.
But that moment where I'm like, oh yeah, I'm back. Now wow. Let's tango.
Now you just rampage as a bear instead, which isn't quite as powerful.
Friggin' amazing.
You just sit down in a bar. Yeah, I was a dragon or Tyrannosaurus.
Tyrannosaurus Rex.
What the heck is a Tyrannosaurus Rex?
And I pulled a dragon out of the sky.
I think it's a type of raptor. But
what
taller.
The heck is a raptor? We don't have raptors around here.
Type of
life
motorcycle?
Frickin' finds a way.
That just sounds amazing.
Oh, man.
He got turned into a Tyrannosaurus Rex,
I
knocked
better.
A dragon out of the air with his tail, and then landed on the bard.
Yep. Oh. You come up through a spell like that with full health, and that's the moment where it goes from everybody's nearly dead and nobody can touch this thing to that thing's as big as you are. Let's dance.
Oh, that's amazing. Do you have other amazing stories? Quick, before we wrap up this episode, we might have time for one or two more.
No, there's one aspect of D&D that we haven't touched on at all when it comes to characters, and that's multi-classing.
Oh, multi-classing.
So,
yes, we have to get to this story.
From
I forgot about that.
From my limited understanding, multi-classing is when you level up your character as you go through the story and get experience and whatnot.
Right.
You can choose to take a level, meaning experience and certain skills and attributes from a different class than the one you're playing.
So like instead of going from level 4 to 5, you go from level 4 to level 4 with a level 1 in something else?
Right.
Basically, okay. Yeah. So if you're playing like, for example, a cleric.
Fancy that.
Yeah.
You don't have any experience with that, do you?
No, not at all. So if you're playing a cleric and you're at like level 6 or whatever.
Okay.
And you level up, you can either take the level and become a 7th level cleric, or you can become a 7th level character where you have 6 levels of cleric skills and 1 level of bard skills to toss things out.
Is that what you did?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'm not going to tell you.
So from a story standpoint, the way that works is you would spend that time, whatever time that experience point signifies, on another sort of track. So if we were to go back to Phyllis Dillweather, Phyllis also found a spell book in her
cookbook pantry.
Yeah, if she went to Goodwill and bought cookbooks, but instead one of them was also a spell book, she might get a level of wizard.
Okay. Which, how would she be leveling up unless she goes through the adventure, though?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not perfect.
She has
perfect.
To cross the street to get to Goodwill. That in and of itself was an adventure.
She turned into a T-Rex on the way.
I got better.
Okay. He turned me into a newt. A newt. Well, I was actually a T-Rex, but I got better. Anyways, so with Phyllis, so she accidentally levels up. Okay, well, she levels up and turns into a wizard as
right.
well.
She gets some experience in the kind of career track that a wizard would have gone through, and now she has a level of wizard.
I want to see Phyllis accidentally level up and become like 3 levels of everything entirely accidentally.
You're a step ahead of my story.
Oh, sorry.
Because when we discovered that this was an option, there was a look that passed between my DM and myself that was like, what if you took a level in everything.
Oh, okay.
That sounds really dangerous.
It's a bad idea.
Did you do this?
Again, well, again, you're a step ahead of my story.
I'm sorry.
The problem with doing something like that, it takes a long time to level up, but I'm talking real time.
Right.
If you're going a week or two, if you're playing 1 to 3 times a month, it could be years before you get to level 12, which is what you would need to have A level and everything.
Right.
So we had to wait for the right moment for this epic tier one shot. When I said before that I played a druid, that was a little bit misleading. I played a character with 2 levels of druid.
Oh.
Wait.
And a level of everything else.
Oh, no.
It took so much math, guys.
So everybody else was like a level 15 bard or a level 15 fighter or something, and
you
were just a level 2 druid, but level 1 of everything else
as well. I was a level 15 character who had... So the way it worked out story-wise was actually really dark, because I was like, how in the world could you possibly have gotten it? The only thing I could think was fall back on a D&D standard, which is a wizard did it.
You've been cursed.
Hey, that's a trope.
I figured a high-level wizard abducted this guy and is like, I'm going to make the perfect adventurer. So she sends him out for about a year to be a druid, and that doesn't work. So she brings him back in, wipes all of his memories.
Oh, no.
And sends him out for another year to be a fighter and see how that works. You do that enough times and you end up with a guy who's really crappy at everything.
But he has a ton of health.
But he can do anything. He can do anything poorly.
What kind of thing? Because I know, like, for some characters, I guess with wizards or things, you get higher level spells that come out of it. So, like, you become level 5, you get these special spells. But if you're level 1... you only get the basic spells.
Right.
Yeah.
So the problem is the way multiclassing works in 5th edition, you take the features that you get at whatever level of whatever class that you use, and then there's some extra math to make it work. Part of the thing that made it tricky was you have to have your stats have to be high enough in any given...
like proficiency?
Let me back this up. There are 6 basic statistics that go into every character: strength, dexterity, constitution, wisdom, charisma, and
intelligence.
Thank you. So, and I could explain that if you want, or we could move right past it.
We'll just move past it, but it's out there.
Okay.
For people to do homework at home.
We've talked about it. Now you guys can go look it up.
Right. There we go.
There are a lot of good memes about this. if you want to take a level in a class, you have to have at least a 13 in its primary stat.
Did you have a 13 in everything?
There's only so many points to go around.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah, I had
Oh, no.
Literally only 13 in everything?
Yeah. Had a 12 in some things, a 14 in most things, and that was it.
Oh, boy. So
compared to characters that are actually level 15 and
right,
have a
that
lot
have
higher.
Like a 20 or 22 in something.
You know.
Yeah.
As
they're
you do.
Really good at smashing stuff. I'm like, kind of okay, maybe.
And
average.
When you get to that level, the bosses are more difficult because of who the people are.
The numbers you have to roll are
insane.
Insane. And there was no way in heck this guy with his plus ones was going to pull it off. So, yeah, basically the way it worked was be a druid. Become a bear, get more hit points. Be a druid, become a bear, get more hit points. Dash is a bonus action because also I learned how to be sneaky from that 1 year I was a criminal.
As a rogue specifically, because that's the one thing that I knew how to do was be sneaky.
Yep.
And that's all I did.
So
did you know how to stabby?
No, I used 2 crossbows, like 2 dual wheeled crossbows.
I mean,
crossbows.
You can stabby people with an arrow.
Know how to shoot real good.
In the knee.
Sometimes.
I think the best thing that happened in that option was they're like, okay, you have become you've become a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And I was like, like in character I say something really, really amazing. I think it was like, it's on now, mofo, or whatever. I don't know. In the moment it was really great, and I don't remember what it was. But my DM was like, you're a Tyrannosaurus Rex. You can't say that. And I was like, yes, I can. Because I made a deal with an ancient entity from beyond the stars, and now I'm telepathic.
From that 1 year I spent as this
what?
Thing.
What? Oh my gosh.
The poor dragon is like, wait, what?
It was that whole session was like, you can't do that. Yes, I can.
Because I'm this.
And here's why.
But I don't do it very well.
Oh,
it took
amazing.
Literally 6 spreadsheets to make that work.
Oh my gosh.
It was
gosh.
Awful. I don't recommend it.
That's for the people who really enjoy the math side of
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Would have a heyday with that.
It's just
and
so,
the DM would just pull their hair out again.
It's just so deep in the Reddit forums. At that point, you just give up on being a successful member of the party and just try to be enjoyable to have at the table.
So you just turn into the butt monkey.
Pretty much.
There's a joke I don't get, but okay.
It's another trope. I've been on TV tropes a lot again this week.
You just try to be the guy. You just try to be the foil. Like I'm gonna try to pull him back down. I'm not great. And then the barbarian gets to come in and like yoink
and actually do it for you. And you're like, thanks. That's what
I
meant
amazing,
to do.
Amazing. I said telepathically because of my.
One other thing that we haven't touched on at all, but we don't have time to go into it. Very much, is all the different character alignments, I think is what they're called.
Yes.
There's like chaotic, neutral.
This
is
pretty spectacular.
One,
but... At some point in the development of this game, they had to come up with a system that would codify the morality of literally anyone. And what they came up with was a system with 2 metrics and 3 options.
It's,
so you
which
it's
allows
impressive.
For 9 different types,
yep.
I guess.
Yep.
Yes.
Hey, I can
ranging
do math.
From lawful to chaotic and evil to good.
Okay, with neutral just being in between
neutral
both of them?
Being in the middle. So
okay.
Some classic examples, your lawful neutral is your Punishers and your Judge Dreads.
Okay.
I can see that.
Your RoboCops.
Oh, jeez.
Your lawful good is...
Paladins.
Your Paladins. It's your Jean-Luc Picard. I want to help you, but the Prime Directive says I can't.
Your chaotic goods are the kind of people who do really good things, but they do it in a terrible way or like
your
completely
chaotic,
subverting or something?
Your chaotic good is your Captain Kirk. This is the right thing, and I don't care what anybody says.
Okay.
By one of my favorite alignments, I think, is neutral evil.
Oh, boy.
It's
Can
it's,
you be neutral and evil at the same time?
Yeah. You're the alien from Aliens. It's
oh,
not,
man.
It's not personal. It's just I'm a killing machine.
This is what I was made to do. This mm-hmm. is how I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not good, and that's bad. I'm not that not bad, and that's not good.
Wait. So you're Wreck-It Ralph now?
Wreck-It Ralph.
I think I turned that one around, but I don't know. Something
Ralph
tells me I said it wrong.
Oscillates on the chart. It's pretty hard to pin him down. That's a question for your listeners. Where does Wreck-It Ralph fit on the D&D
yeah.
alignment chart?
Answer in the comments.
Can we also get some fan art of Wreck-It Ralph playing D&D? You know what that reminds me of? This is a completely off-topic story,
but
it was one of these Tumblr posts, which I see a lot of Tumblr posts on like Facebook and things, but someone was playing and their DM wasn't terribly creative, but he had run out of options. And so someone rolled for like a perception check. Like, I want to see what's in the air. He rolls a perfect 20 or a natural 20.
Oh, geez.
And he had already seen everything there was to be seen in the area. And so the DM's like, okay, well, you all of a sudden get this vision where you're on like a giant's table and all your characters are all around you, but they all seem kind of fake. And you see these 5 giants all around you with these huge dice. And then everything goes back to normal.
What?
Because there was nothing else to be seen.
Wow. Wait a... Oh my gosh. Roll
so
for
just,
metagame knowledge.
I just want to see Wreck-It Ralph like in that situation on the table and everything. That's what I was thinking.
That
of,
got but, really meta and I am okay with it.
It was amazing. But all right, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this nice long episode. Lucas,
right.
Thank you once again for joining us on the episode.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Sure.
Yeah.
If
our
you
pleasure.
Wanna, if you want to find out more about the stuff that we talked about, if you want to run the one shot that we've been talking about, check out my website, scintilla.studio. You can find me on the DMs Guild.
Hey.
Download that adventure.
Yep. And so we're going to go ahead and wrap up the episode. Seth, how do we want to end this one? Pick a random note.
I don't know that there's...
Hey, I've got an idea because we've got D&D is the title of what the game
oh,
that we're talking about. This is the logic that we do, Lucas. Don't worry. It's gotten really
oh,
weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's not actually any music intrinsically associated with D&D.
With the exception of bards.
Well, bards make music, but they don't have like a leitmotif.
Fair
it's
enough.
Just like, this is the bard's theme.
So we have D&D. So we obviously have to use the note D
twice.
In there somewhere. But we can't do it twice because that's perfectly in unison, unless we want to do octaves.
We should do an octave and then something in the middle.
Something in the middle. Okay, so if we give Lucas the note, like a D3 maybe, which is below middle C, and then Seth,
Yay.
If you hit another D and I'll come in with an A in between or something like that.
Okay.
Then we got D, A, and D. maybe?
Hey.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Hey is my note, so we could do that. So, Lucas, your note is... Ready?
Yeah.
Goodbye.